started, man.
Yeah, brother,
I can
like,
dig it.
Stop. Right on.
There's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying.
I think anyone who puckers up their lips and presses it against their boss's buttocks and then smooches is an ass kisser.
I seem to be inept at everything except my work. I'm good at my work, so I confine myself to that. All I want out of life is a 30 share and a 20 rating.
The man's enlarged my mind. He's a poet, warrior in the classic sense. I'm a little man. He's a great man.
Think of it as colors. There's black and there's white. And in between is mostly gray. That's us. Now, gray is a tough color because it's not as simple as black and white. And for the media, certainly not as interesting. But it's who we are.
This is your What Was Your Favorite Zimmer in Minnesota Moment? Leader Fan Radio Network.
Excuse me?
KFAN. That's KFAN.com. 2 minutes, 48 seconds past 3, Central Daylight Saving Time. Bumper to Bumper show is live. It's local. It's on the air. And it is a 3.5 hour tour on an increasingly steamy Wednesday afternoon here in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. My name is Dan Barrero, host of the show, Guardsy Produces. I drop my cheaters. It's a bad sign symbolically when I drop my cheaters, as in readers, 3 minutes into the program. I hope that's not an omen.
Well, better than yesterday when I fired the first break, like 90 seconds into the show.
Is that what it was?
When yeah.
We suddenly got
I still don't know how I did
it. The common man, Dan Cole?
Yeah, so apologies to anybody on the network yesterday that was listening. Made the podcast a little bit of an adventure as well. Not that anybody needs the inner
so
ball
they
talk.
So had a lot of reasons to be bitter with us yesterday. Me being Barrero, you being Guardsy, the producer of the show, in that I blew through two breaks during our conversation with Ken Dryden. You started a break at the wrong time,
yeah.
At basically the start of the show, just past 3 o'clock.
Yes, we were very early for the first break and very late for the 5 o'clock. Yeah. But who cares? And no. Ken Dryden's deal. That was unbelievable.
Was absolutely. And I didn't even get to the most personal stuff I wanted to with him. Maybe unraveling a mystery that continues to haunt Chicago Blackhawks fans forever. Largely because I'm not sure how many people in our audience gave a damn, but I would like to know it. So I'm hoping at some later date. Who's calling me right now from Minneapolis? I don't recognize that number. I'm not going to take it.
You should get it right now on the air. It'd be wacky.
Yeah, but the thing... It's very wacky. The thing about that is, as we know, there are all these horror stories about if they ask, is this the Dan Barrero? And you say, yes, it is. That then they use that yes, it is to link you...
Mm-hmm.
To some sort of a drug ring or something,
yeah.
or they get into your bank account.
It's
I don't even
dangerous.
Know how that's possible.
It's very dangerous.
Not sure it is possible, but I continue to be worried about exactly that. Power Pack broadcast today, man. Oh man, we got a nice lineup of guests. We'll give you the details via the Borton Volvo scorecard a little bit later in today's opening segment, maybe second segment of the program. We got some breaking news out of Minneapolis that we want to get to before the show is done, if not sooner. Maybe we even get to it with Kessler, but I have a hunch we might get to it sooner. Don't forget, we are back with the Grand in Your Hand contest. That is back. Generally, we're constantly updating and making changes to make this whole process better for everybody. And to that extent, we're going to shoot for about 10 past the hour for a Grand in Your Hand. So stay tuned. That's not that far off. And you can get the keyword, and you'll have a chance to win. I mentioned off the top of the program that we are indeed your What Was Your Favorite Mike Zimmer in Minnesota Moment
Tweet
leader. Are we on the verge of a major breaking Vikings story? Well, I'm probably sensationalizing a little bit, but thought it was a pretty interesting story that Chad Graff came up with via The Athletic today under the headline, Mike Zimmer's Last Hurrah. As training camp nears, his Vikings future is cloudy.
He's got big balls.
Well, I think he likes to think he does. There's no question about that.
The elk behind him draft night would suggest the same.
There's no...
He wouldn't argue that.
Which one?
Well, the big one.
Weren't there several?
Multiple elks, but probably multiple I'm speaking elks. About the big elk.
Very true. Here's what Graff's sources are suggesting. As training camp looms just weeks away, Zimmer remains without a contract extension, and there's growing tension between the two sides. As with all negotiations, things can change quickly, but Zimmer has been irked, you say, by the fact that it's now July, and he remains without a new contract, according to multiple sources who requested anonymity to speak freely about a sensitive topic. He's begun preparing for what seems like a growing possibility that he may coach this season in the final year of his contract. Now, he lays out, and we'll get to it a little bit later, some questions about about Spielman's status as well. But let's keep it narrow, the focus here early, on Zim. And what we make of his run with this team, how much of a right does he have to be irked by the fact that apparently nothing's happened? We've been through this once before, and what we came to find out was, very quietly, the team had extended his contract by a year, correct?
Yes.
Last year or the year before? We went through this at least once.
Yes.
And we all speculated on it and wondered, and then all of a sudden... Somebody from the Vikings says, oh, by the way, yeah, we took care of that.
Well, they had an option that was very quietly picked up.
That's what it was.
I think
you're
that
right.
was the procedure.
You're exactly right.
None of us knew. We all knew that he had the one year
exactly
left,
it.
But nobody knew until we knew that he had some kind of option that was then picked up.
I think you've got a good memory on that. I think you're seeing it very, very clearly. So the question on the table is, are the Vikings blowing it? Is ownership blowing it by not resolving this issue? Does Zimmer's tenure here deserve better? Or do you buy the notion that, hey, look, he's a big boy. He's got big balls. He's got to understand that this is part of the deal.
It's a National Football League.
We don't give away anything for free. He's very well compensated. And we want to see what happens, quite frankly, in a pivotal year, 2020. That'll be the third year with Cousins, when presumably you got all your other pieces in place. You got four more Kubiaks on the staff, and we're paying for all of them handsomely, I might add. So therefore, let's see what we got, and then we'll be, if we break through, then we'll be glad to extend forever. Now, on the other hand, what makes this kind of juicy is, what if Zimmer says, let's just say the Wilfs read this story and they go, let's put this to bed here. This is not helpful. COVID-19, winner of our discontent, got enough other issues. Let's extend them 1 year. If you're Zim, do you go,
1 year?
Really? I'm looking at the numbers here. In fact, he brought it up not that long ago. Winning percentage of .599. That's third best in franchise history, behind only Bud and Denny.
I think he said that verbatim to you at the Perch last year, too.
I think he did.
By the way,
I think he actually did bring that up.
He's got those talking points.
Since he got here in what year was it, 2015?
Sounds right.
We've got 50 victories. That's tied with Seattle for the fifth most in the National Football League. And he says, I don't like this drips and drabs thing. No, I'll tell you what. Let's just play it out.
2014 was his first
year. 2014, I apologize. And we kind of gave him that as a mulligan because of what he had inherited. He needed a year to sort of figure it out. So we're helping his record overall. But his winning percentage is what it is. It's basically .600, even including that year. What if he says, I'm going to coach the hell out of the club this year. And then let's let the chips fall where they may. And if we make it to the bowl or we get close, God bless you.
We'll see what you think.
See what you want to offer me at that point. But I also might be interested or willing at that juncture. You've done it your way. We're all adults in the room here. You can do it your way. I also then am going to protect myself, and maybe this is my swan song. Maybe we say, it's been a nice run here in Minnesota, but we might both move on. What do we do with Mike Zimmer? Does he have a right to be irked? Booth@KFAN.com is the Bradshaw and Brian inbox. Let's try to stay on schedule today. Let's give you an opportunity right now to put a grand in your hand.
Yes, Bills is the first keyword of the show. It's our national cash contest, or nationwide, whatever you prefer. Text Bills to 200-200 to try to put a grand in your hand. Text Bills to 200-200.
I'll also give you, when we come back, my biggest reason why this is a tough question. A tougher question than you can argue it should be when you have a winning percentage that is the third best in team history. And is basically winning six out of every, I guess it would be six out of every 10. Is that 600?
I can do that math, yeah.
I think I can. If we're wrong on that, email us. Booth. Is this dedicated to Chip Scoggins?
It is, yeah. I don't know how accurate it is, but it's Tennessee River by Alabama.
Chip, do you ever get tired of being stereotyped the way that my producer apparently is attempting to do right now? Do you ever get, or do you just, like, are you perfectly willing to play along?
I love it. I can never get enough of that, so.
Okay, that's good.
The music, just keep it coming.
All right. That's fair enough. Chip Scoggins, of course, writes a sports column for the Star Tribune newspaper.
There's only like four songs that have Tennessee in the name, by the way. I'm like halfway through.
What others are you? Do you feel any sort of special kinship to Tennessee Ernie Ford, for example, Chip Scott?
Not a big fan. I'm a big fan of Ernie Ford.
So. Understandably so, I would say. I put up a poll via my Twitter account on the should the Vikings extend Zimmer contract or play it out this season. And it has to do with a piece that Chad Graff had put up today suggesting that there might be a greater level of what's the word I'm looking for? Angst for the head coach that apparently no contract extension is in place. And now we're into the month when technically, if it actually happens, training camp is supposed to begin. To the classic question, the most important question here, do you think it would be advised for the Vikings to extend right now, whether or not there is any annoyance, or do you get the feeling that they might be willing this year, when it comes to both Spielman and Zim, to play it out, as unusual as it is, on the last year of Zim's deal, and then figure it out at the end of this season, of course, if there is a season?
Yeah, I around the draft time, Dan, I did a column addressing that where, you have this draft and all these questions, and oh, by the way, your head coach and your general manager are entering a lame duck season. And I talked to some people at the Vikings just to see if there was something going on behind the scenes quiet that we didn't know about, because they've done that before.
That's right.
And I was told no, that they have not had conversations about extension. But I thought, I got to be honest with you, I thought it was going to be inevitable after they gave Cousins that extension.
Mm-hmm.
I thought you would want to line up your GM, head coach, and quarterback. And whether that's fair or not, I always got the sense that those three are linked, are tied together. And if the experiment of Cousins failed, then it was probably going to cost the GM and the head coach their job, because it's such a historic contract and the money they gave them, and that was supposed to be the final piece to a team that went to the NFC Championship the year before. So whether that's 100% true or not, it just seems like that was the the situation. And so, you know, after they gave Cousins that, I thought they would, and particularly after them, you know, won a playoff game this year, as bad as it ended in San Francisco, I felt like, you know, give them, add a year or two to that contract.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's kind of the wishy-washy way of doing it.
Yeah.
Not going all the way to 5 years, but it's not having a coach in or a lame duck year. And it, NFL's different. It's not like the college where, oh, they got to do it for recruiting purposes, for optics that way. But I do think it's not the best situation where your coach is having to ask about his, answer questions about his contract constantly throughout the year. So maybe it still will get done. I don't know how much the COVID, you know, yeah, that affected it at all, but I thought that they might add a year or two. And then that way, because let's be honest, if you want to pull the plug and start over, that's not really security adding 1 or 2 years. That's just a buyout, right? That's just severance package.
Right.
So I thought they might do it, and I think they still might. I guess I'll be a little surprised if they just say, play it out, we'll see what happens, because this is going to be such an unusual year that I'm not sure this is going to be the ultimatum, like, if you don't get to the playoffs,
yeah,
because you don't have, with all the, you know, disruption that this COVID has caused, if that's going to be the, you know, if that's going to be the deciding factor if they don't get to the playoffs this year.
That is the X factor, of course, that changes everything, because a couple people have said, why are you guys even speculating on this? There's not going to be a National Football League season, and none of us know whether there will be. To your point, though, about doing it, I would think that if you're going to do it, you should have had it done already, right?
Sure.
It seems to me to make less sense to wait this long if your intention is to, if your objective all along is to get it done. The value of doing it is early enough where Zimmer's not irked anymore, if indeed he's actually irked. And I don't know how irked he is. I wouldn't be surprised if he is. And that leads to the next question, which is, what if Zim says, what if they come to him at this point and say, all right, let's put this to bed. We're going to extend 1 year. And he says, not going to work this time, guys. Let's do it the way we're apparently headed doing it. We'll play it out. And let's just see where we all are at the end of this thing, which of course would potentially open the door to Zim saying, I'll take my football and go someplace else.
Well, that's the risk you run if you're the organization. If you're not going to be completely behind a guy, he has options too, and he has leverage. And you know, I don't doubt that he's irked, because I know in the past, whenever his contract has come up, I know he mentioned it to Mark Craig, and I think probably other places.
True.
He has his winning percentage at the tip of his tongue.
Yes, he does.
He's not afraid to mention that when this comes up. And so he may not get up there on the podium and campaign for a contract, but that's his way of saying, hey, I've been pretty good here. You know, I'm sort of on the fence with it. I think he's done a lot of great things. I mean, the structure and stability and just the professionalism he's brought to it. He's a really good coach. But there's been enough ebbs and flows with his tenure, you know, just kind of the really good season and then the stinker and then a really good season. It's just kind of been stops and starts. And so I don't know that I'd be willing to go all the way to say, you know what, we love you, Sam, here's 5 years. I would be willing to put a year or two on that, even if it's just for optics' sake, right?
Right,
so you're not having to deal with him being annoyed, right?
Yep.
Just for optics' sake. And if it doesn't work out this year and you feel like, you know what, you've gone as far as you can with it, you can write a big check to pay off that and go a different direction. And I think that would be worth not having him have to explain or answer questions he can't really answer about his contract, why he didn't get an extension.
I share your ambivalence. I think you've crystallized the issue, sort of the roller coaster nature of the run to a certain extent, and also even how when we've gotten to the NFC title game, let's go put it this way, when we stepped up in class the couple times we've advanced in the playoffs, when we got eliminated, we got routed. We were not competitive. We were not a factor, which I think is fair to be part of the evaluation process. Now, the other question, the other elephant in the room, I guess, would be, how do we view Spielman?
Well,
do you view them as a duo completely? And of the two, do you think one deserves to be a little bit more vulnerable than the other? Because I actually think Spielman, especially as it pertains to the offensive line, has a little bit more vulnerability. If I had to pick between the two, that there should be a little bit more reason for concern that the ongoing inability, I guess I'll put it a different way, the flat-out neglect over years of the offensive line should put him, despite all the other good things he does, in a position where I'm perfectly willing to say we got to wait this thing out, and I'm not sure how long I want to extend Rick Spielman.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, we know their contracts have been synced up. So I be honest with you, I don't know that if they've quietly given him an extension and not Zimmer, I think I'd be surprised if that happened, because I view them as a package. I really do. I mean, they've been together for a number of years. It's a good tandem. And I just feel like if you're going to get rid of one, you're probably going to get rid of the other, right, if you're starting over. I don't think that you're going to keep the GM around and put this all on Zimmer's feet if you don't get the results that you want this
right.
year. And we all joke about, you know, Zim getting his way in the draft with the quarterbacks and all that. But he has a boss, right? I mean, Spielman's his boss. He's the GM.
Mm-hmm.
He has the final say over the roster, and the deficiencies they have at the offensive line, that might be a little bit on Zimmer, but he's not the GM. Rick Spielman is. And it also comes back to the quarterback. You know, if Kirk Cousins, he was good last year, but we've also seen him, you know, at his, when he's not good and the struggles he has there. And so if this experiment with him doesn't work out, that's a Spielman issue, you know? And so, I would, if you're looking at the flame outs they've had at the last couple of years and the weaknesses in this roster that you see, that's more a Spielman problem than a Zimmer problem, in my opinion. And so I think it's a package deal. I really do. I don't think you would see, if they decide to make a change here, you know, after this year or the year after that, I don't think it would be Spielman stays and Zimmer's gone. I think they would both be gone.
Chip Scoggins, Star Tribune Now, Russo Radio, 4:55 today. Pat Kessler will join at 5:15. It's an unanswerable question whether we're going to have pro football or college football, but we're all trying to take our best guess at it. What do the clues tell you?
I'm losing optimism by the day, I got to be honest with you. When you just, it's funny, at the beginning of June, Dan, I thought, holy cow, this is going to be football. There might be fans in the stadium. Maybe not, but there's going to be football. And then when school started opening up and allow athletes come back and you saw the number of positive tests and, you know, Clemson has 30 guys in quarantine and Florida State and Texas and these schools have to shut down because they've had too many tests. And then you see all the surges happening in states around the country. It's just, it's not promising. Now, I don't think the Ivy League suspending fall sports until spring, I don't know that that is necessarily going to be a domino that pushes all the FBS conferences in the way that a lot of people do, because the Ivy League is a different deal altogether with no scholarships, and they have the money to kind of support this. So I think that FBS conferences will act independent of that, but that's another ominous sign when a conference that size decides that they can't do fall sports. And so I was just talking to Garzy with this off the air there, Dan. So a month from yesterday, the Gophers are supposed to open up fall camp. So as we sit here today, can you realistically envision them holding 120 players there, a full football practice right now? It just seems unrealistic.
Yeah.
I mean, if we're being honest, and I try to be optimistic and I'm hopeful, but something drastic needs to happen here in the next couple of weeks for me to feel like they're going to be able to play football. Now, if they do play college football, I don't think there's any way they're going to have non-conference games. I think one scenario that probably the best hope at this point is that they push the start of the season back, just play conference games, eliminate the non-conference, because there's a whole set of factors. If you don't know how the testing is at those schools, in the Big Ten, you sort of get a sense that everybody's going to have kind of the same model of formula testing. When you're getting a non-conference, some of those schools may not test or test as often or whatever. So I could see them just wiping out the non-conference and just playing conference games. But even then, it like I said, I'm losing optimism here by the day, as you see just not getting any better.
Well, as you know, it wasn't that many weeks ago, especially in the South, where there was even talk about, well, we're going to have people in the stands. I mean, do you think all that even there has evaporated, or do you think there's still some folks in at least that part of the country insisting that they're going to somehow be able to fight through all of it?
No, because the South is where a lot of these cases are, the hot spots are, you know, really
right.
surging, and so I think they're even losing hope. And one other thing is, too, is, you know, early on in this, there's the talk of playing spring football, and then it just kind of went away as numbers decrease, and it looked a little more positive the way things were going. And then in the last 2 weeks, what have we seen? A lot of national reports about the spring models getting more and more focus. And so that tells me even the Southern schools and the Southern conferences realize that it's probably not feasible to have a fall season. And so, you know, the spring option, that'd have to be the last resort because there's so many complications with that. But I guess if the alternative is no football versus spring football, you deal with the consequences there. But I think they're trying to put that off as long as they can. But let's be honest, Dan. I mean, they have to make a decision here in the next couple of weeks. I think it's not like they can drag this into August. So I would think by July 20th, you're going to know whether they're going to be able to do it in the fall or have to move it to spring.
Stanford announced, revealed today that they've dropped 11 sports. Now, again, they had a bunch more than a lot of schools do. Mm-hmm. I mean, they may have had more than anybody in the country. Very successful, versatile, wide-ranging program. Is that foreshadowing of what's going to come elsewhere in terms of sports being eliminated? Where are we? Where are you in that? And it, particularly as it pertains to the University of Minnesota.
Yeah, it's they had 36 sports, which is gigantic.
Ridiculous.
And I think Ohio State has the most. I think they may have 40. But I don't, it seems unrealistic you're going to be able to support 36 sports. And they realize they couldn't do it. But when a school that size drops 11 sports, that gets your attention. And yeah, if there's no fall football, it's going to be a bloodbath. I mean, every school is going to cut sports. It's just going to happen. I think the model that the Gophers came up with, if they don't have a fall football season, that they stand to lose $35 million in revenue. You can't furlough your way to $35 million. It's not realistic. And so, that's why I think schools are going to wait as long as possible to try to prevent that from happening, because if you're losing $20, $30, $40 million out of your budget, you're just going to have to drop sports. There's no other way around it. And so we're seeing more of these cases. Obviously, when Stanford drops 11, that's a big number. But I think you're going to see more and more of those Olympic sports get cut. And people are bringing up the idea of endowment. These schools have just massive endowment size. And people in sports administration around the country today and say, why don't schools use that? And everyone wrote back that, people, give that money to endowment for specific things, not to cover losses from, athletic. And then, a lot of schools probably say, tie your athletic budget to your athletic revenue, and we don't dip into the university endowment. And so I understand that. I think people are just kind of grasping that. Is there any alternative besides cut? This is so, they're losing that kind of revenue from your, an alternative than other than cut sports if it gets that deep.
Ryder Cup, no one's surprised by this, but they made it official today. That's been postponed in Wisconsin until 2021 as well. And, Gardner and I have been talking about this for a long time, and maybe you and I did the last time we chatted, that there is probably still, as much as I understand why people want to see live sports come back, I don't think anyone has to apologize for that. It still strikes me as ultimately probably the thing that is least likely to succeed, because by definition, there can be no such thing. When you finally assemble the group, and of course with football, as you mentioned, the numbers are even larger, there can be no rational way to socially distance, certainly on the field or on the court or on the ice, whatever. And so as long as that's the case, it still strikes me that it's probably going to end up, we want it to be first, but it's going to more logically end up having to be last.
Yeah, because, okay, you can go to a restaurant. I took my family out to a restaurant last weekend. You can socially distance there. How do you socially distance 100,000 people in a football stadium?
Yeah, right.
Even if you cut it by, half or a quarter of that, with those concourses, it's just it's not feasible that you could really socially distance in a football stadium or, baseball stadium or whatever. And so it's hard because sports play such a meaningful role in our life with, as a diversion and just entertainment. And it's just such a fabric of, what we do. But you're right. It's just a lot more complicated than going to a restaurant or some of these other things that, give us enjoyment. And so, you know, if I will say I'm going to watch the United on Sunday, and hopefully, you know, we can have a game that night. It'll be nice just to sit down and watch a sporting event live, a team from our market. But for some of these sports where when Twins, you know, hopefully baseball does, but for football, where you have such large numbers in stadiums, I think it may be a while, Dan. Just the way things have happened the last 3 weeks to a month, it's just really kind of sat my optimism for this thing getting off the ground this year.
Chip Skoga at Star Tribune, last question for you. I saw a quote today in your newspaper. I think it was from Rich Hill, and I thought it was a pretty legitimate complaint. And it was something to the effect of, you know, if we're doing this the way that we've been told we're going to, we're getting tested almost every other day, I think is what he said, for players. Mm-hmm. Then he also said, but the people who are collecting all the tests and so forth, or the clubhouse people who are still inevitably have to be part of this, it's like twice a week. And he said, you know, it doesn't make a hell of a lot of sense to me, because they're in the middle of this thing too, and we're exposed to them, they're exposed to us. And so you're back to, we've had several complaints already about, you know, how quickly tests are coming back from a results standpoint. This is the kind of stuff, to me, there's some parts of it that you can't possibly predict or any league can be expected to prepare for. But the one thing I thought you wouldn't have to worry about is that, in terms of the testing itself, that it would be a little bit lax in terms of how fast they brought stuff back or even how many tests they're doing. I thought that's the one thing they did have control of, and they had to know that whatever minimal chance they have to get this thing going, and it's still probably been minimal anyway, but whatever chance they have has to start with an obnoxious amount of testing, correct?
Well, and I saw his quote about the clubhouse attendance, and that's absolutely true for that part, because, you know, for riders, I was out there Monday. We have no contact with anyone. I mean, when we do interviews, we're up in the press box and they're down below. We're doing it through Zoom technology, virtual interviews, and I don't think we'll have in-face interviews with pro athletes or pro coaches for a long time. And so if whoever's being around athletes and coaches should be tested the absolute same amount that they are, because, you know, that you're having that contact. But yeah, my understanding is that Major League Baseball sends all the tests to a company in Utah. And listen, they had all kinds of time to figure this out. You know, all the delays they had. And there's already tension with the players and baseball as is. So they didn't need this complication where it's taken, you know, longer than they expected to get the results. And so I don't blame the players. You know, if they don't get the test back, I wouldn't go on the field either. If they guaranteed that you're going to test one day and you're going to know the results the day after that, that's what it should be. And I understand that there's complications and things can happen, but they have to understand that players are going to say, you know what, we're not going out there if we don't feel safe. And so it's just, you know, it's unfortunate that baseball didn't have this, you know, in order or whatever mistakes that they made. But I fully support the players that have said, you know what, we're not practicing, or teams that shut down for 2 days or however, because the baseball doesn't have their house in order in terms of the testing. And that should be the number one emphasis on everything. Forget the results, for anything. They have to guarantee that those players and coaches and staff are going to be safe.
I'm assuming that you are making plans to be part of the Chicago bubble for the excluded eight when the Wolves and seven other teams that did not make the Wolves or make the NBA bubble in Orlando. You'll be there, I'm sure, in Chicago, because you wouldn't want to miss it.
Is that the NIT of baseball? Is that what we're calling it?
Pretty much, of basketball. Yes, exactly right. At best, it might not even, might be more like the College Insider of tournament of basketball, to be quite honest with you.
I will not be there, but we're in discussions about being there for the Twins opener. Yeah, well, it's so complicated now about traveling and do you take a car or airplane? But if all goes well, hopefully I'll be there for the Twins opener.
Hop in the car with Lavelle. What could possibly go wrong?
You take the Star Tribune Winnebago is what you do, and just don't let Lavelle drive it. That's the key to it, I would say.
So this is what it'll be with our social distancing. I'll be driving. Lavelle will be in the back seat with a cigar.
That's true.
On his phone, on his laptop. I'll be his cad. I'll be his chauffeuring in there. That's what it'll be.
Thanks, my friend. We'll talk soon. Be good.
Okay, guys. See you. Bye.
Chip Skoga, Star Tribune. We're a little late for your grand in your hand opportunity, but better late than never this hour.
Cash is the keyword for the 4 o'clock hour. Text cash to 200-200 if you'd like to try to put a grand in your hand. Our national cash contest. The keyword is cash. Text cash. to 200, 200.
Interesting open letter in favor of some semblance of sanity. Does it have any chance?
A fan.
Has our hockey nightmare finally come to an end? Do we finally have some resolution of when Kirill Kaprizov is going to come and be a member of the Minnesota Wild? That's the question on the table. That's what brings us Russo Radio on a very special edition this afternoon, which means we'll do the top five at 5:55 today. Kessler is scheduled for 5:15. All right, Russo, this is your opportunity to give us the update on what you have learned about the Kaprizov saga, and does this finally put a close to it?
We're getting closer. You know, we'll definitely know in the next, by early next week, what the Wild plan. But as I reported today, according to sources, that they've decided that if Kirill wants to sign now, they're willing to sign him to his 2-year deal now, where they'll burn the first year of the deal. He can't play this summer, but it'll allow him to become an NHL rookie next season, and then he can get his second contract next offseason, which is, it's a huge costly decision to Craig Leopold in the Wild. It's basically a $5 million decision. You're not paying him his entry-level contract in year one of a 2-year deal now, but instead of getting 2 full years under that contract, and then him getting that huge second contract, now the Wild are going to let him make that decision now, and if he wants to come, he can. What the league has not given the Wild clarity on yet, nor me when I emailed the league, is can the Wild sign him now, bring him over here, and have him get acclimated right now before the team heads to Edmonton, and just kind of be around the team, get used to his teammates, see what the Twin Cities and Minneapolis and St. Paul are about, the practice facility, all that stuff. But basically what the league has decided to do is say these guys like Kaprizov can't play this summer, but they can sign, which is a bit of a compromise compared to what it was about a week and a half ago.
And from the Wild's perspective, from the organization standpoint, why is this something they are willing to do?
I think, the big thing, they'd like to get something out of it and get him over here so he can be around the team and just kind of, meet everybody. But really what it is it's Bill Guerin's way of assuring the fact that they're getting this kid signed. Because the problem is that if you're trying to sign him to a 2-year deal starting in 2021, Kaprizov might say to the Wild, next season isn't starting until January anyway. I haven't been on the ice since March. Now it's 9 months where I can't play. I'll just sign in the KHL for another year and I'll come back, at some point in the middle of next year or the year after. And if he signed after January 1, it'd be a 1-year deal anyway. So I think it's just a way to assure that you're going to get here. The thing that Bill Guerin is willing to do is sign him now. And if he really genuinely, and this is what I think he's conveyed to his agent, Paul Theofanis, in the last couple days, is that, look, if Kirill really just doesn't want to sit till January, we'll assign him somewhere right now. We'll loan him somewhere where he could start in the fall. Because there are a lot of European teams that at least say that they plan to start on time. And we'll let him play as long as he comes back for training camp. The problem with that is that Kirill most likely would want to play with Moscow in the Continental Hockey League in Russia. And Moscow has already said, given every indication, that if Kirill signs with them next season, they're not just going to let him leave in December for training camp. He's got it. If he signs, he's staying. And so the question that I think Bill Guerin is going to pose to Kirill at some point is, hey, would you want, if I can get you a job for 2 or 3 months to play in Sweden and Finland and Germany and Switzerland, wherever, would you be willing to do that? This way you can play, you can get some games under you, and then you can come here ready to roll for training camp.
Do you have indication that the Wild has reason to believe that he and or his agent are interested in this sort of thing, that there's reason to believe that they'll say, yeah, okay, we'll raise our hand to it, let's get this done?
I think that they do believe that he'd be willing to do this. I think Kirill just wants to start his NHL career. I think he's just worried, the league won't let me play. Now, yeah, all of a sudden, we don't know when next season's going to come. Now I can't play anywhere. That's the one thing that we keep on saying, that next season starting in January. I mean, the way this virus is going, who knows what tomorrow brings in all of our lives, let alone the National Hockey League. But I think that's the big thing with Kirill, is he just wants some clarity on what his situation is and when he could start.
But from Kirill's standpoint, burning the first year, even though he won't make his annual salary this year and an immediate signing bonus, I mean, it makes all sense, all the sense in the world, because it gets him closer to that big contract. I mean, and, you know, as I keep on saying, the Wild are going to have to, in a second contract, whether Kirill proves it or not next year, give him a pretty exorbitant second contract to make sure that they could sign him long term. Because of Kirill's age, he could be an unrestricted free agent in 4 years, in 2024. So after all this waiting, Kirill could be out of here in 4 years. So I think the Wild, next summer, they're going to have to, you know, pony up some big money in a summer where they're going to have to pay a lot of guys. I mean, Foligno's due a new contract. Brodin's due a new contract. Kevin Fiala's due a new contract. You know, there's a lot of guys on this team that are going to be due new contracts. So now all of a sudden, you know, you add Kirill into that mix, and Bill Guerin suddenly has a lot of tough decisions on the horizon from a salary cap standpoint that is going to remain flat because of the damage that's been done to this league.
Russo Radio joining us here on The Fan. As I mentioned, Kessler coming up later this hour, top five at 5 at 5:55 as well. You know, we've already had, I guess you could say, some serious pushback on the part of Major League Baseball players and teams, actually, in a couple of cases, regarding concern that the tests that were promised are not being done often enough in some cases, or results aren't being returned quickly enough. There's pushback on the part of the NFL union, players union, on the basis of how many preseason games to play. Is that going to be par for the course? What are we hearing about the relationship right now between NHL players and management as they try to get everything in position for the Canadian bubbles that are set up? What level of cooperation are we feeling, or is there also still a great deal of hesitation and uncertainty on the part of NHL players?
Well, you know, it's a bit convoluted, but I do feel that there's a little bit of tension between the players and the union, because I think that the players feel like return to play protocol and the whole return to play in these bubbles is being tied into a new collective bargaining agreement. And essentially, if the players, who really a majority of them don't want to go away for upwards of really, you know, 75, 80 days, you know, if you go to the Stanley Cup final, they feel like they have to vote yes, because if the return to play goes away, so does the collective bargaining agreement. So, you know, now all of a sudden this is going to go to a full membership vote the next 2 days before it's potentially ratified, and most likely ratified on Friday. And you have seven teams worth of 23 players each that have no skin in this game, that aren't coming back to play this year, that are essentially going to be voting yes. And now all of a sudden the union and the NHL have basically 150-0 vote lead on return to play. So I think that's frustrated a lot of players here. This is a huge commitment for these guys to leave their families, go up to Edmonton, be locked in this bubble, and Toronto, be locked in this bubble and essentially, you know, have, in the case of Edmonton, a gigantic wall built around this hub city. I mean, it's hysterical to think about. And now all of a sudden you're asked to play without getting paid. Although there is a playoff pool, but you're not getting your salaries. You have no fans in the stand. And in the middle of summer, you're asked to kind of get into game mentality. So I'm not telling, you know, fans that they got to feel sorry for NHL players, but this is just a huge oddity here. And I do feel like there is some friction and tension here, that this is, you know, a one or nothing vote, as opposed to a return to play vote separately with the collective bargaining agreement. Because again, as I said, without one, you can't have the other.
Guardsy tells me that we had a Zoom interview today with Parisi. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, Parisi was great on the Zoom, talking about return to play. He officially entered phase two this week, so he's now getting the twice a week testing that all the NHL players have gotten, wearing the mask around skating. And we talked to him about the oddity of you know, just playing summer hockey and having to just immediately. I mean, these games are going to be here quicker than we ever imagine. And also, you know, the one interesting wrinkle of this whole thing that I just get a kick out of is that I asked Parisi on the call, is that, you know, normally an NHL bench is pretty rated R or worse. And now with no fans in the stands, I mean, theoretically, we're going to hear everything. I mean,
it's
these
true.
Refs are going to have thick skins, And so, you know, I asked Parisi if he thinks behavior is going to change, and he thinks no. The F-bombs will still be flying and all that stuff as, you know, competitiveness and intensity ramps up as the playoffs go along here. So, you know, I think Zach's, you know, Zach, like all the Wild players, are in this odd position, but look, they got, in my opinion, a really good draw in the Vancouver Canucks. It's a 5-game series to try to make the playoffs. And the way that they were playing at the break, obviously there's no way to just magically replicate that, but this team definitely from a depth perspective, from an defensive perspective, and in my opinion, they can score plenty of goals when you have guys like Parisi and Fiala around, and suddenly a fresh Eric Staal and Matt Dumba now getting, you know, the cobwebs out of a really weird season for him, having to come back from that crazy injury they had 2 years ago. In a 5-game series, I think the Wild could easily beat Vancouver to advance into the actual quote-unquote playoffs.
I don't know if this subject came up at all, but whether it did or not, do you have any kind of a sense of the physical condition of the players and how much of a of a challenge that might end up being? Because I, you know, when I've talked to Louis about this, he's tended to believe it's not as big an issue as it might have been 25, 30, 40 years ago when he said, he fully admitted, players in the offseason did nothing, that they're all sort of, you know, they're just flat out most of the time in better shape these days. Do you agree?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. I think Tom Reed has like a stipulation contract hanging in his bar that it's, and then it says, like, be sure to come to training camp. Here's what you got to do. 10 push-ups, 10, you know, sit-ups, you know, he was just like, go on a run for a half a mile. You know, that's what they had to do back in the day. Now, I mean, that was when you use training camp to get into shape for the season. Now these guys come to camp in shape because it's a million miles an hour right from the very beginning. So even though a lot of these guys have been in stay-at-home orders and couldn't get to their normal skating in gyms, I mean, these are professional athletes. A lot of these guys have been skating and working out for a long, long time. I mean, even in the stay-at-home orders, I'm sure I could promise you a lot of these guys found ice in some way. So I think they're, you know, you just mentioned Zach Parise. I mean, you know, Zach Parise's not showing up to camp out of shape right now. So I think all these guys will be ready to go. And it's going to come quick, though. It's going to be a 13-day training camp, really, because they leave for July. They start Monday to leave July 26th, and then they'll be there for 5 days and have a couple of scrimmages, an exhibition game, and then it's, man, they play Vancouver.
In terms of him talking about the, you know, the virus itself, COVID-19, and all the obvious concerns that a number of other players in other sports have articulated, where was Parisi on that? Is he more philosophical of, hey, look, you know, we're going to take, I'm ready to take our best shot at this sort of thing. I think it's doable. We got a shot. Or does he seem apprehensive in that regard?
You know, I don't want to put words in his mouth. He did address it on the call. I think that, yeah, look, he's got a family, right? And all these guys have families, especially the Minnesota Wild. As I've joked with you before, I mean, they lead the league in children, you know. So, I mean, they've got a lot of kids running around that locker room. So they want to make sure that they're healthy. And the other thing about COVID-19 is none of us know what the lasting effects are years and years down the road. And, I mean, we're starting to see when you talk to Bill Maurice, I mean, he talks about that we're starting to see evidence of damage that this does to your brain, to your lung capacity and things like that. And these guys, you know, besides the fact they want to be healthy and not bring anything back to their families, I mean, their livelihoods are their health and being physically capable to do their job. So I think they're really worried about that. So I think the most important thing here as they get into phase 3 is it is going to be incumbent on all NHL players, all 24 teams, to in phase 3, where they're not in a bubble, where they are going back into society, where they can go into restaurants and bars and back to their family, to be smart. Because the goal is if you have a bubble in these hub cities where guys arrive healthy and nobody can get in, the theoretically they can't get sick as long as they don't allow anybody else into these bubbles that aren't getting tested all the time, blah, 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 blah. And so during, you know, because the tests are always 3 to 5 days behind, in other words, if I'm exposed to COVID right now today, I'm not going to, according to Dr. Maurice, I'm not going to test positive for 3 to 5 days. You know, those 5 days before they get on these planes to go to the bubble city, it's important on guys on every team's leadership to set the tone and tell these players, go to the rink, go home, go to the rink, go home, put yourself in a quasi-quarantine now so they get onto this plane, they're healthy, they fly into Edmonton and Toronto, they enter this hub, and then nobody's getting sick. And then as long as nobody's getting sick, they could play hockey the way that we've all seen it. They don't have to worry about, you know, catching the virus there. And they can make, and they could absolutely pull this off. The scary thing now is that all of a sudden Edmonton today had a, had a bit of an outbreak where, you know, where hospitals have been, and their ICUs have been inundated. And we all look at Canada as like they're doing the magical touch and doing everything well. Well, now all of a sudden we're starting to see COVID entering there. So I do think that it's just important for these players to be smart.
My sources say that you don't really think there's anybody left who has not already subscribed to The Athletic. But if there's a chance that a couple folks have slipped through the cracks, there's another great opportunity related to the long-standing relationship between The Athletic and KFAN to take care of that issue.
Yes, theathletic.com/KFAN. I'll get you 30 days free. And frankly, I mean, you know, we joke all the time that we just talk about The Athletic on here, but if you haven't tried us, now's the perfect time because sports coming back, MLS starts, Major League Baseball, Twins, I mean, obviously, the Vikings and training camp coming up, and then here we got Minnesota Wild starting training camp Monday, so with return to sports, because you get 30 days free, now is the absolute time to just get in for free, read what we got, listen to the podcast, and see if you enjoy it. And if you do, re-up at the end of the 30-day free trial.
Yeah, I mean, 50% off for an entire year. That's a pretty good gig if you can get it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty good. Now, well, I just hope that I can somehow cover some of these games.
No, give up on that. You'll be having to cover those from long distance because the days of, as we talked last time, the days of you actually being able to talk to people whenever you want them, in their house, in their locker room, whatever, those days are over. It's done. That's never going to change.
Yeah, I agree. I'm a little worried about that. I will say I have right now a hotel room in Edmonton set for, you're not going to believe this, July 17th to October 8th.
That's a lot of points. Optimistic.
It's a lot of points right there.
Yeah, I know. My guess is I'm going to cancel it, but the Athletic actually wants me to represent them and cover the whole league for 80-something days, and I don't know, the whole thought of that. Yeah, that what it is the quarantine for 14 days where you can't leave your hotel room that's giving me the shake.
Right. That's right. Well, you got to follow the rules. Give yourself a chance.
Yeah, I know. But can you imagine if I'm the one that decides and says I'm not going, and then that first day I'm watching the Minnesota Wild play on my TV from here in Minnesota out, and I will be in the beyond worst mood.
You will be haunted.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That's not the alternative to quarantine. Is not good.
No, I think you got to do it for your own sanity.
I know. We'll see.
Thanks, my friend. We'll talk soon.
Yep. See ya.
Russo Radio, Athletic. Great opportunity to get in on it if you are not a subscriber. Top 5 at 5 will take place at 5:55 because this was the time we had for Russo. We will get to some sports headlines then. We'll get to some news headlines and maybe even some political stuff with Pat Kessler. In the next segment, first, though, it's time to try to put a grand in your hand once again.
Yes, check is the keyword for the 5 o'clock hour. Text check to 200-200 to try to put a grand in your hand. Our national cash contest, about 10 after every hour. Text check to 200.
30 on the Fan.
I wish the American media would take a great look at the views of the people in Congress and find out, are they pro-America or anti-America?
Pat Kessler.
Because people have got to know whether or not their president's a crook. Well, I'm not a crook.
I can't trust Obama. He's an Arab.
Pat Kessler.
Tear down this wall.
I did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis airport.
Senator, you're no Jack Kennedy.
Pat Kessler.
And now, to help Dan break down all the tough questions in politics, it's our own
Pat Kessler.
Political Wonk.
He's got big balls.
I feel like a supermodel, except like times 10.
It's Channel 4's
Pat Kessler.
Excuse me?
Dan Barrero on the Fan.
That's all. I'm done.
Are you hungry or are you starving?
Kessler is indeed back with us. It is, after all, Wednesday. Top 5 at 5 will be coming up at 5:55 as well for more significant sports news of, indeed, the day. Kessler, let's begin with this. I thought I heard some sort of a rumor, maybe it's more than a rumor, I don't know, that there's already talk of the governor calling back, calling for another special session sometime very soon A, is that true? B, am I hallucinating? Or is it something that's still yet to be determined?
All three of those are true. All three of those things can be true.
They can be true.
And number one, you are hallucinating. But yes, Governor Waltz is going to call the Minnesota legislature back in session. And I need to point out to our listeners that he must do this because he is very likely going to extend the peacetime emergency for another 30 days in Minnesota to deal with the pandemic. That's going to make a lot of people's heads explode, but it's very likely that he is going to do that. And then the legislature will probably vote. There are a number of people in the legislature that want to take away that power from him. He will probably keep it. And one other point, very possible that by the end of this week, Governor Waltz will declare a mandatory mask order for the entire state. That's something that is in the mix here, and it's possible that that's going to happen. Not saying it will, but the way things are going, I think it's likely. Not very likely, but likely.
The ongoing discussion is, I'm looking at the calendar, and what is the date today? Today is July 8th, and so it's moving.
July 8th.
This thing is moving fast. Ordinarily, we would be saying the state fair is right around the corner, and it's not right around the corner because we don't have it, at least for 2020. We know that. But what do we associate with the end of the state fair? We associate public schools going back in session.
Yep.
Now, some people go early, but basically it tends to be after. And I thought somewhere on the calendar, too, because you can't do everything in a day here, that the governor's recommendations were going to be coming soon. Do we have any update on how quickly we're going to hear from him? And when we do, what are we likely to hear?
This is something that I think a lot of parents are really concerned about, and for a whole bunch of different reasons. But President Trump, yesterday and today, is pushing very hard to open all of the schools in the country, in places where it is safe. I mean, in hotspots like Miami or Arizona, where the coronavirus is raging and things are bad, they probably are not going to be able to open schools. But what if Iowa, Wisconsin, Minnesota, he wants the schools to open? Are we safe enough? That's going to be the big question. And if we do open the schools, and the governor's going to have to decide this within a week or 2 weeks, if that happens, what are we going to do to be ready? What are Minnesota schools going to do? Are there going to be plastic partitions? Are you going to allow all of the students to be in a classroom? Are they going to be social distance? Are you going to let the fifth grade class play with the other fifth grade class? There are so many things. The teachers, 30% of teachers are over the age of 50. Are you going to allow them in the classroom? These are all really important things. If the kids have to stay home again, what about the parents who have no place to take them? Think about what has happened here in just the last few months. That's what the governor is going to be announcing probably in the next couple weeks, yay or nay. And President Trump is threatening to cut federal aid for schools who can open but don't. So, I mean, this is kind of a cluster, you know what, that we're in the middle of here.
Yeah, it's daunting. I mean, there's nothing
easy
about it at all. And I'd read to the audience part of a letter from, I think it was, I don't remember the name of the organization, but it's basically American Pediatricians that came out last week, and they said they believe that the starting position should be that schools are going to come back in some form or another, and they have a number of analytics that point to a lot of quality of life issues, even health issues of a different sort about students, about what is being lost. I think the loss is severe. The question is, okay, you can know that, but how do you balance that with the other costs? And you named a couple of them. You know, when it comes to the age of teachers, even if you are a school district that says, we're coming back, we got a plan in place, we're going to try to be safe, but we are coming back, you're not guaranteed that every teacher is going to say yes. And so then you're back to, okay, do you have enough teachers to replace those teachers if indeed enough of them say, I'm just not comfortable with this. This isn't worth it to me. And my gut tells me, and this is to me the problem with the president's approach, is that I don't think there's any way there can be a one-size-fits-all for the entire country in this regard. That there have to be, does he have the power to do what he's threatening to do? Do we even know if he has legally the power to do what he's threatening to do?
Well, he doesn't have the power to order schools open.
Right.
He does not have that power. This is education of our children is something that is left importantly and properly to all of the 50 states.
That's what I thought, yeah.
The 50 states then have school districts. Minnesota has 400-plus school districts run by parents and school board members. However, the president does have leverage in that. He could withhold federal funds if he directs the Department of Education to do that. But then the teachers properly come back and say, okay, great, we'll open. Give us a plan. Give us a plan of how to open. Who's going to pay for all of these precautions we need to take? Is the federal government going to do it? There is no plan. That's the bottom line. There is no plan. You mentioned the American Academy of Pediatricians, which has put out that note, and they note that kids who are not going to school, they're not learning, they're not interacting, they will suffer some debilitating effects emotionally, psychologically, but how fast can you get them back into school? These are tough questions here.
Very tough. Yeah, I wouldn't want to have to make any of these decisions. And, you know, my gut tells me there's a middle ground somewhere, but I don't even know if that's feasible. Because there's some educators who say, if you go to the idea of, all right, it's a tiered system, you're going to be at school 3 days a week. But we can't, if we do it that way, we can do a better job of distancing in terms of number of kids in the class, and we'll at least give you something of what you have missed. But I don't know if that's feasible at some schools. And in fact, for parents that you, as you mentioned, I'm not sure that puts them in a very good position either when it comes to two-parent homes, and they're already having enough difficulty finding places for their kids to stay in the interim. So I would not want to have to make this call, because there are no, I hate to use the cliche, it's so trite, but there are no good, results of this, or no good decision that doesn't have a downside to it that is very fundamental and very severe. So I'm going to be very curious to see. I mean, to me, the thing we have going for us as a state, speaking of localized, is our numbers are really good compared to most of the country right now. And they're even projected, depending on which, you know, again, outfit you want to believe, as being very good as late as November. But then you're back to the chicken and egg, where it's like, well, but are they only good because we have continued to be more cautious than other places? And the moment you stop being that, are they likely to go back in the other direction?
That's the tough part. That's exactly it, where now the pressure will grow to open up the state more, to open up more businesses. And because we've done so well with all of this, we've kind of tamped it down. We've stretched it out. We've got enough. We have enough hospital beds. We have enough equipment right now. We've got a morgue, an empty morgue, for God's sakes, that the state of Minnesota bought for all of the bodies that we're going to be stacking up. So we've done really well. But if we open up like they did in Texas, in Arizona, in Florida, where now they are literally out of ICU beds in Arizona, it could easily go that way. There are three ways to stop it, as we say every time we talk about it. You can wear a mask, you can social distance, and you can wash your hands. If the governor orders mandatory masks, is there going to be a revolution? You tell me.
Probably will be. Let's get a pause in. We got a lot more ground to cover. Pat Kessler, part two of our conversation, always controversial. Occasionally.